Despite all the negativity on Friday, the Brewers managed to rebound, get Saturday, get Sunday, and get ready for these Pirates starting tonight. Doesn't matter how you win, just win. The Brewers take the series from the Cubs. Let's talk about it next.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good morning. It's Monday, August 29th. Yeah, August is almost over. It is almost Craig Timber. I'm Dominic Catronio. This is Locked On Brewers, your only daily podcast, Monday through Friday, dedicated to the Brew Crew all season long. I'm the statistician for Bally Sports Wisconsin and on the post-game host on WTMJ 620 for Brewers Extra Innings. I'm at just about every single game. If this is your first time finding the podcast, welcome in. We're going to spend the next 20 minutes or so talking about the Brew Crew this weekend, getting ready for the Pirates, talking about that Cardinal voodoo magic that they got going on. They won again last night on Sunday Night Baseball. The Cardinals are now 21-6 since the All-Star break. 21-6. Think about that record for a second. Yes, the Brewers are a 500 team since the All-Star break, and they had some really good baseball happening at the end of July. But 21-6, there is not much the Brewers could have done to stop that. Now, the Brewers would certainly love to be something more like maybe an 18-12 of something of that nature to feel like they're more competitive. But 21-6, geez, man, this is crazy. Anyway, Brewers take 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. We're not so much going into a full recap of each game, but just going to talk about what are the most important plays of the contests, what we liked, what we didn't like, and some roster updates as well, and get ready for the Pirates with Corbin Burns Day tonight, 7:10 first pitch for the last series of the year against Pittsburgh. First and foremost, a lot of folks, you know, we were surprised. I was surprised on Saturday when I get the notification that Garrett Mitchell was called up for his big league debut on Saturday. I've been saying for a long time on this podcast, if anyone's going to get called up, I expect it to be Este Uri Ruiz. But first and foremost, congratulations to Garrett Mitchell. Well-deserved first-round pick back in 2020. It's not like you could have picked any one of those four guys in a way and say, yeah, I'd be happy with that. I was making it as a point of saying from the roster and from the team perspective of why they would probably choose Este Uri over a Sal or over a Garrett or even over a Joey Weimer. Now, I don't think Joey Weimer is quite yet ready to come up to the big leagues, but still it would be exciting if he were to show up, but I don't think the Brewers ever really had that in their mind. What I was thinking is Ruiz is already on the clock. He's already under 40, man. You don't need to make really any corresponding moves as far as putting somebody on the 60-day or outriding anybody. He fits into the position nicely to play center field. But the Brewers thought, you know what? We need another left-handed bat in the outfield. And it's true. It's absolutely true. The only left-handed true outfielder is Christian Yelich. So for Tyrone Taylor, this gives an opportunity for him to be more of a platoon role because center field has only been a right-handed position for the Brewers all season long, including when Lorenzo Cain obviously was on the team. When you look at Tyrone Taylor's numbers, his swing and miss rate against breaking balls has gone up and up and up every single month this season. He has not made the adjustment that the pitchers have made to him since his really hot May. When May is when he took the position away from Lorenzo Cain, and Lorenzo Cain decided to, you know, officially retire. He hasn't made his mind up yet, but the thought is he's going to retire. But for Tyrone to have the position, and now not only do the Brewers feel that it may not be Tyrone's in the future, but to bring up somebody who's not even on the 40-man. So now you look at the 40-man roster. Tyrone Taylor is a center fielder. Jonathan Davis is a center fielder. Granted, I think Davis is a one-and-done type season for him, would likely be outrighted this offseason, and then somebody else could pick him up, or he could elect free agency. But now you got Garrett Mitchell, who's a center fielder, and then Sal Frelick on the way, and Este Uri Ruiz, who's already on the 40-man. That's a lot of center field. There's a lot of company to figure out for Tyrone Taylor and the Brewers in their outfield moving forward, because you know Christian Yelich is going to be left, and he got one more full year of team control of Hunter Renfroe next season, so he's going to be out in right field. McCutcheon is a one-year deal, so he's likely going to be walking and trying to get paid this next offseason. But the outfield is kind of crowded right now for the Brewers for the final month of the season. But for Garrett Mitchell, look, the AAA numbers really jump off the page. The Brewers have said for a long time, when he's healthy, he is one of the most talented players on the baseball field. He's a little less than a week away from his birthday as well. Garrett Mitchell is only going to be 24 years old in a week. And Orange California native in AAA this season, 20 games. He had a 3.44 slash line, meaning a 300 batting average, a 400 on base, and a 400 slugging. 3.45 is considered absolutely elite, but granted, it was only in 20 games. So every game that he appears in the big leagues, you're going to be sitting here and saying, man, this is only his 22nd game above AA in his professional career. And I've talked about this on Brewers warm-up yesterday before the game. What we're watching with Aaron Ashby develop before our eyes, and I say it every time after his starts, it's only his 21st or his 22nd or his 23rd start in the big leagues. And for Garrett Mitchell, we're going to be saying the same thing. You know, this is only his 40th game above AA. He's played the majority of his minor league career in AA, 79 games in AA. Not that AA is a bad league by any means or bad talent, but the jump from AA to the big leagues is ginormous. The dump from AA to AAA is big, and even from AAA to the bigs is big, but not as big as AA to the bigs, obviously, and that's, you knew that already, but there is a massive difference in that for a baseball player. But the Brewers feel confident in what Garrett Mitchell can do. I loved his swagger out there on the field. He gets the double, was thinking too, as soon as he saw that ball get bobbled in center field. He showed the wheels, 30 feet per second, on that sprint to second for his first big league hit. And by the way, it came in a clutch moment. The Brewers needed those runs. They did not give up the lead the rest of the game after that Garrett Mitchell single. And in my opinion, this is my Dom fan voice talking here, that might have been the swing that opened up the dugout for the Brewers, because two pitches later, Christian Yelich is officially in fuego. He hits an opposite field two-run shot. When Christian Yelich is going oppo, you know he's feeling good. And he'd already been robbed earlier in the game on a great play at second base by Nico Horner. We could talk about the shift another time. I've done a full 180 about the shift, about my opinions. I'm like, oh, you can't tell where the defense where to play. But in my opinion now, look, not only Yelich, but even on the Cubs, there are a few hits. I'm like, man, that's supposed to be a hit. And our product needs some help with that right now. But we can have another episode for that another time. Not when the Brewers are in the middle of 18 games in 17 days and playing their most important baseball games of the season. So congratulations to Garrett Mitchell. In case you missed the other roster moves, some paper moves is what we call it in baseball, where Alex Jackson was moved to the 60-day injured list. Remember, Alex Jackson is a reserve catcher on the 40-man right now. So by putting him on the 60-day injured list, that opened up the 40-man spot to put Garrett Mitchell onto the 40-man. And to put him on the active roster, Jonathan Davis was placed on the IL with right elbow effusion, which is like fluid buildup in the throwing elbow of Jonathan Davis. So he's on the injured list. Brewers got Jace Peterson back this weekend. Aaron Ashby, though, was placed on the IL last week in Los Angeles, in case you missed that. But it sounds like he's not going to miss a lot of time. Another good news on the injury front, Trevor Gott started throwing this past weekend. Think about how taxed this bullpen is right now, specifically a guy like Brad Boxberger, like we saw on Sunday. We're going to get into the game recaps here in just a second, but having Trevor Gott back would be super helpful to ease the load on Hobie Milner and Brad Boxberger as being the bridge guys to get it to your Taylor Rogers, Matt Bush, and Devin Williams. And Devin Williams got back on track yesterday, too. That was great to see the clutch double play against Wilson Contreras. And the Brewers don't have to see Wilson Contreras for the rest of the season. They're very excited about that. Or Ian Happ or Seiya Suzuki. They're very excited to not see the Cubs anymore. But at the end of the day, if you got Cubs fans chirping, you got to let them chirp because they won the season series. And the Brewers obviously are very frustrated about that. They dropped 10 out of 19 in the season series against the Cubs. And for a team that's nearly 20 games under 500, it's just really frustrating to see it this year. And given the way the Brewers dominated them last season and the struggles that the Cubs have had against just about everybody else, the Cubs are under 500 against the Pirates. They're 6-10 against the Cardinals. And then for the Reds, they're just two games over against the Reds. They're 6-4. So the only two series that they have the advantage in are the Brewers and the Reds in the division. Elsewhere in the National League, they lost the series to San Francisco. They lost a series. They got swept by the Yankees. They swept the Phillies earlier in the year as well, though. But they're a team that they got swept by the Dodgers. They split with the Rockies. They lost 3 out of 4 to their South Side rivals. It's been an odd year on the North Side for the Cubs. But at the end of the day, they won the series. Tip your cap. they won the series. There's nothing you can say, and the Brewers are going to circle those games if they lose by one or two games to miss a playoff spot. You're going to circle these games against the Cubs, and you're going to circle a couple games against tonight's opponent, against the Pirates at the end of the season. Let's talk about the weekend. Let's dive into a little more stuff. Before we do that, are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? What's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit. It's no big deal, right? Absolutely wrong. The truth is your reaction times slow way down when you're high. And you not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high and get a DUI. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council. I'm going to sit here with the belief that the Brewers absolutely should have won all three games. And you never want to say they should have swept a team, but they absolutely should have won on Friday night. They lose in 10 innings, 4-3. The Brewers, the big story, once again, the failures with runners in scoring position. They go 0-11 in regulation, and then they add a couple of hits with the placed runner in the 10th, as they've been doing as of late. They ended up going 2-15 on Friday night with runners in scoring position, but yet they only allowed two hits to Ian Happ. Ian Happ did something that's only happened twice in big league history. Ian Happ had the only two hits for his team, both being home runs, and his team won the game. Third time that has ever happened in big league history. The other two times, Manny Ramirez and Hank Aaron. That's it. And now Ian Happ is on that list from Friday night. Freddie Peralta, 6 no-hit innings. He gets pulled after 6 and 82 pitches. Let's start there first. A lot of folks are mad that Freddie was pulled after 82 pitches. In my opinion, there's two ways I look at this. First and foremost, if you want to get mad at Craig Counsell, get mad at me too, because I was okay with this decision. 100% fine. I tweeted in the second inning of that game that Freddie Peralta's velo was down. I was already concerned about his velo in the second inning. You can check the timestamps on that. So I'm thinking to myself, if you get through six innings with Freddie, that would be huge. He was hitting 89s with his fastball. And I know what you're thinking, well, Dom, I mean, he can ramp it up to 95. I mean, he did a couple of times, but he doesn't sit 90, 89, 91. He sits 92, 93. And that's when he gets a little extra giddy up on it. And then we've seen him touch 97 since coming off the injured list. That was concern number one. Concern number two for me, and if I'm the manager, if I'm Craig Counsell, and I see Freddie Peralta grinding through a few innings, and his offense is not giving him anything. A Tyrone Taylor homer was the only offense they provided to Freddie Peralta. You know that not only could the no-hitter be gone in the blink of an eye, the lead could be gone in the blink of an eye. That's something that's going to be very concerning for a manager, because the moment you leave him out there too long with the way that the offense has been playing in the month of August, you don't know if you're going to be able to get the lead back. So the moment that you leave him in for a batter too long is going to be the moment that it's a batter too late. That was the second thing. And the third thing, let's be honest with ourselves. Through six innings on 82 pitches and no-hit innings, and a guy coming off of injury, there was a 0% chance he was going to be given the chance to throw the final three innings of a no-hitter. Zero. There's no way he's going to get the final 9 outs on, let's say, 25 pitches, just to say go 107 pitches. There was no way he was going to go longer than 110 coming off of a shoulder issue. There's no way. So if he's not going to finish the game, you might as well pull him and lean to your bullpen. And they had the A bullpen ready to go. Bush, Rogers, Boxberger, Williams. Unfortunately, Bush got tagged with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Okay, he made a good pitch. Happ put a better swing on it. It's very much, I've used the analogy in basketball. Good offense, good beats good defense every time. That was this case. A great swing on a great pitch. Tip your cap. Not mad about Freddie Peralta coming out after six innings in the slightest. Matt Bush had a tough one. And the error as well by Luis Urias was a big one for that inning as well. But again, the Brewers had a base runner in every single inning. They went 0-for with runners in scoring position in the innings 1-9. They had runners on first and second with nobody out and did not even move the runners twice. Didn't score them in either of the opportunities. That's where you lost the game. Not because you pulled Freddie Peralta. And then going into extra innings, Devin Williams gets tagged by Ian Happ. Again, tip your cap and move on. The Brewers should have and could have won that game. The crazy double play with Jace Peterson. And Jace was already in as a defensive replacement, mind you, for Keston and for Urias to move back over to second base. It was a full off day for Colton Wong, which is why he just came in to pinch it, and that was it for him. But thought for Jace Peterson. People saying, oh, why are you pinch hitting him when you have Keston on the bench? Like, look, it's just the way the lineup shook out. And I thought I had the full confidence as well, saying Jay should be able to get a knock here. And he didn't. It happens. Now, for Saturday, the Brewers, another grinded out game for a while. And then the offense, as I tweeted, released the valve on Saturday. The bunt attempt in the seventh inning, then the botched throw by Morel kind of started to crack it open a little bit, maybe give the Brewers a glimmer of hope. And then Yelich crashed the door open with a three-run no-doubt blast to right field to make it a 4-0 game. Yelich had a four-hit game on Saturday, and just for good measure, the Brewers added two more homers in the eighth inning to really put it away 7-0. It was their eighth shutout of the season. Last year, they led the National League in shutouts. This year, they're in the middle of the pack. So that's number one. Good to see that. Number two, the add-on runs. And you could feel the tension start to be relieved and start to feel like, oh, okay, we are good offense. We can do this. And for that game, too, Brandon Woodruff, man, there is no such thing as a second-half All-Star or a second-half Cy Young, but Brandon Woodruff might win it if there was one. Six innings, four hits, one walk, 10 strikeouts, 97 pitches, 69 strikes. Nice. Also had 19 first pitch strikes out of 23 batters faced. He has been dominant since he came off the injured list. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball, looking like the Cy Young form that he was in at the end of last season. So Brandon Woodruff now, in 11 starts since coming off the IL. The team is 8-3 in those starts. He's got an ERA sitting at just 2.35. A FIP under 3. He's got 79 strikeouts in those 65 innings, and opponents are only hitting 205 off of him. Dominance. Great to see from Brandon Woodruff. That was my biggest storyline from Saturday's game. And then from Sunday, we talked about Garrett Mitchell already. If you're watching the whiteboard, Garrett Cookies Mitchell. If you missed the story of when he got word that he was getting called up on Friday night, his manager, Rick Sweet in AAA Nashville, called him at like 11:30 at night, but Garrett missed the call. And when asked, what were you doing when Rick Sweet called you and you missed it? And he goes, oh, well, I was eating a chocolate chip cookie. So I'm already putting the nickname Cookies on Garrett Mitchell. We'll see what happens with that, if it sticks. And for a guy, I mean, he's had to overcome a lot injury-wise, but also remember, he's type 1 diabetic. And there are not many professional athletes that can find a way to manage a diabetes. I mean, he's been diagnosed since he was 8 years old. And there was a great interview with Sophia Minter and his mom, Shannon, on the show yesterday. I know it's up online, I believe, on Brewers.com if you want to check that out. She was so proud of him. The whole family's proud of him. Really fun moment yesterday for him to get his first big league hit in such a big moment. For me, the big thing I'm going to take away from this game, aside from Garrett Mitchell's clutch, is that the Brewers finally won a slugfest. Right? The pitching wasn't pretty. Eric Lauer did not have his stuff today. He still grinded through five innings. He did allow another home run. He had four walks. He had six hits. Of the 101 pitches he threw, only 63 were strikes. He did not have his command in this game, but yet sometimes you pitch ugly and get a win, and that's exactly what happened to Eric Lauer. He's not going to complain about it. Every single Brewer had a hit in this game, top to bottom. Colton Wong had three extra base hits in this game. The first time in his career, he had three extra base hits in a game. Two doubles and a homer. Christian Yelich hits another home run. Both Wong and Yelich, back-to-back games with home runs. Yelich had a three-hit game. How great is that? Yelich, in fact, he didn't strike out in yesterday's game. And then he only struck out once on Friday night's game. And then on Saturday night's game, he only struck out once. So for three games against the Cubs, in a total of 15 plate appearances, he only struck out twice. He's seen the ball well right now. He's going to the opposite field again. His batting average is up to .264. He's white hot. Let's keep it going. That's been the sleeping giant all along. If the Brewers could just get more extra base hit production out of Christian Yelich, look out. That could be something massive moving forward for the Brewers. They get 16 hits in the game. They scored 9 runs. Yeah, the Cubs scored 7, but the Brewers needed to prove that they could win a slugfest like this. Finally, got it done, and they got it done against the lefty, go figure, with Sean Newcomb coming out of the bullpen, and then the Brewers had all 6 of their lefties get hits and a walk against the lefty. Whatever, man. Baseball doesn't make sense sometimes, and it was a fun moment there in the middle innings as the Brewers built their lead. And then finally, Devin Williams, the changeup had the bite again. He looked like Devin Williams. I am very concerned about Brad Boxberger's struggles in the second half. Hobie Milner got back on track as well. Great to see in that. An inning and a third for Hobie and only allowed one hit. Peter Strzelecki gets a hold too. So the Brewers needed this weekend, to say the least. We're going to look at more big picture stuff coming up next. We're going to get you the playoff updates. We're going to talk about what happened in Kansas City too after the break. I don't know if you saw it. I mean, it was all over Twitter yesterday. Right after the game ended for the Brewers, the Royals hosting the Padres. And what was a nail-biter for the most part in this game, but the final score would certainly not tell you that. Josh Hader obviously has not pitched well since going to San Diego. And I don't want to sound like the, haha, I told you so kind of guy, but this is exactly what the Brewers were fearing. And he tries to get a soft landing from his manager, right? Bob Melvin says, you know what, we got to take him out of the closer role. We got to get his confidence back, see what he can do in non-high leverage situations. So he entered the game trailing 9-6 in the bottom of the eighth inning, right? So the game's decided. His job is just to make sure they're still trailing heading to the ninth inning, or at least in striking distance, I should say. And Josh Hader struggles exponentially. He comes in for the bottom of the eighth inning, and it goes like this. A leadoff single, double, walk, double, single, strikeout, walk, single. Then a pitching change. They had to bring in a position player, Will Myers, to pitch after Josh Hader, and the Padres ended up losing 15-7. I feel terrible for Josh Hader. At this point, it's yips. I mean, he was all over the place with his command. Josh Hader threw 34 pitches, 19 of them were strikes. And this is exactly why the Brewers traded him. Because there was fears that if this stuck around in the second half on the Brewers team, imagine the Brewers right now, if Josh Hader was imploding in the way he is right now, with Devin Williams continuing to be dominant in the eighth inning. Could you imagine that conversation in that clubhouse of going to Devin Williams saying, hey, you're the closer now. Josh Hader is not going to be pitching in high leverage anymore. Yikes. I'm not rooting for a guy's failure because he meant so much to this city. But there is something that David Stearns and Matt Arnold saw in the metrics. The swing and miss was down. The release point has been changing a lot. They got the value out of him that they needed to get out of him because right now all of that value is completely gone. And what a story this second half is going to end up being, because the final playoff spot is likely going to only be between San Diego and Milwaukee. Okay, St. Louis won again yesterday. Voodoo magic, whatever. St. Louis is a really freaking good team. They're probably going to win the Central now. They're six games up on the Brewers. However, Milwaukee didn't lose any ground against San Diego as they are now a game and a half back heading into tonight's action, but essentially two games back with the tiebreaker not being in their favor. And San Diego is heading to San Francisco tonight. They'll start off a series with the Giants. What a story it is that the Brewers and the Padres, who made the biggest trade of the deadline, are now intertwined in what will be the most fascinating race in the final month of the season. Man, the story writes itself, doesn't it? It's going to be crazy. So if the playoffs ended today, the Cardinals would be hosting the wild card series against the Padres. Now, if the Brewers get into that sixth spot, they would be going to St. Louis for three against the Cardinals, which no easy task, obviously. And then on the other side, the wild card matchup would be the Phillies going to Atlanta for a three-game series in the ATL. And then the Mets and the Dodgers would have a bye. The Dodgers would be the number one seed. And the one seed matches up with the wild card games. So the Dodgers would match up with either the Braves or the Phillies in that case. And then the Mets would match up with either the Cardinals or the Padres currently, or the Brewers hope it'll be them. Just keep that in mind as we head the final month of the season. The Brewers sitting at 67-59. The Cardinals are now 74-54. I've joked about it a few times now, but Craig Timber is approaching. And if you're not familiar with what we're talking about with Craig Timber, we go back to 2019 and 2018 when the Brewers' epic runs to get themselves into better playoff positioning. In September in 2019, they were 20-7. In 2018, if you include October, they were 20-7. They've got a chance to do it. I mean, look, I look at 2018, right? That team goes to the NLCS. They were a .500 team for a good chunk of the season. Now, they had a great May, don't get me wrong, but They were about a 500 team for most of the season, and then finally they clicked into gear for the final month of the season. I don't think that the Brewers are that far off from that 2018 team, right? They feel a lot like that. Better pitching, obviously, to say the least. Now, that team won 96 games. I don't think the Brewers are going to win 96 games this year. They would need to win 29 more games here down the stretch. They would need to go something like 29-8 to finish off this season, which, hey, who says no? But that would be a heck of a finish for the Brewers to get to 96 wins. All they care about is series wins right now. That's all that matters. And I don't care how you do it. I don't care who you do it against. Did you win the series? Cool. Good job. Did you get a sweep? Cherry on top. Sweet. You're gaining games in the long run when you are winning series. Just going 2-1, 2-1, 2-1. That's all you need to do the rest of the year. And I know we talk about the fact that this stretch is all against teams under 500. Don't sleep on the Diamondbacks. And this isn't me being a hometown homer. They just swept the White Sox in Chicago. They have some nasty pitching. And the way it's lining up right now, the Brewers are going to see that nasty pitching. You're probably going to see Merrill Kelly. You're probably going to see Zach Gallen. They don't have much of an offense, but now they're calling up the number one prospect in minor league baseball, Corbin Carroll. They've got some young talent on the way. Dalton Varsho, of course, former UWM Panther. You've got Ketel Marte still, Josh Rojas. Christian Walker is the best first baseman that nobody's talking about in baseball, somebody that we've talked about in trade deadline season. They're not going to be a slouch, okay? In Arizona, the ball flies there. It's always going to be tough to play there. And then you go to Colorado, so you wonder how the pitchers are going to react to that. And as things shake out right now, with Corbin Burnes getting the start tonight, you would figure Corbin Burnes would avoid Colorado and pitch in the finale against Arizona and not have to pitch with the high-altitude air in Colorado. So keep an eye on that moving forward. Here's the upcoming schedule once again in case you've missed it. The Brewers have 3 against the Pirates starting tonight, 4 in Arizona starting on Thursday, 3 in Colorado starting on Labor Day Monday, and then they're back home for the doubleheader on next Thursday against the Giants, then home for the weekend against the Reds, and then Monday they have an off day, only one of their final 3 off days remaining. But this is where it gets weird. Off day Monday, 2 games in St. Louis, off day Thursday before opening up a 6-game homestand with the New York teams, the Yankees and the Mets. And oh, by the way, the Yankees just lost a series to the Oakland A's. Oakland A's. The Yankees are a sub-500 team since the beginning of June. Okay? I'm not going to sit here and say the Brewers should win the series automatically, but they should give up a much better fight than you are anticipating for what the Yankees are doing right now. I'm not saying the Yankees are a bad team, but the Brewers should be able to go pound for pound for them, just like we saw them go pound for pound with the Mets earlier in the year. Don't know if you're going to see Scherzer and DeGrom, but the Brewers have enough, in my opinion, to hang in there. And that's when the bounces fall your way. You're going to circle that, say, all right, we got some good breaks. You got to take advantage of every single good break the Brewers get from here on in. And this is one of those breaks facing all sub-500 teams before the gauntlet waits in middle of September. St. Louis, New York, New York, Cincinnati for a breather, and then St. Louis and Miami back-to-back. Miami, they're pitching. Sandy Alcantara is the Cy Young. Pablo Lopez has been great. They've got some young studs coming up, and then you'll finish at home for the Diamondbacks. It's all laid out in front of them, to say the least. Corbin Burnes Day tonight. That could be a good way to keep things going, keep the good vibes going, make it a winning streak. I think you know the movie that I'm talking about there. Brewers are looking for a 3-game winning streak, which is shocked me when I looked this up. The Brewers haven't had a 3-game winning streak since that 2-gamer in Minnesota and the first 2 games in Minnesota or in Boston when they won 4 in a row. The last 2 games against the Twins and then the first 2 in Boston. That was the last time they had a 3-game winning streak. They've had 2 3-game winning streaks in the second half. Both of them came in July in those first couple of series coming out of the break. In fact, their only other 3-game winning streak since then actually goes before July. June 29th had a 4-game stretch when they swept Toronto, they won the last 2 against Toronto and then swept Tampa Bay. A winning streak. That's on the line tonight as the Brewers try to get back going in the right direction with Corbin Burnes. Just one little step, and then before you know it, you've built an entire staircase, and the Brewers need to generate some mojo, and they need to do it now. The countdown is on. Congratulations to Garrett Mitchell. Congratulations to his entire family. It was an incredible moment to watch yesterday. All right. 7-10 first pitch tonight. Corbin Burns gets the ball against the Pittsburgh Pirates. I've got Brewers extra innings again tomorrow night after the game. You can tune in live, join in, chat. We'll have a good time from American Family Field. And then I'll be in Arizona as well. I'll be going back home for the four games there, doing the shows live from the Valley of the Sun, where it's only going to be 105 degrees. Pretty excited about that for Labor Day weekend. All right. Thank you for listening. Hope you have a great, great Monday. Stay dry out there today. We'll see you at the ballpark tonight. Until next time, keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.